This is Jim Inkster coming today on the show. 7 days away from Election Day, we will talk about the race for president as National Public Radio has it a one-point advantage right now for Governor Mitt Romney. That mirrors the polls from Real Clear Politics. 48-47 with a week to go, and we'll talk about it with Republican Chairman Roger Villery of Louisiana and Tony Garisco, longtime Louisiana Democrat, former state senator. And we'll also hear from a candidate who's on the ballot in Louisiana for President of the United States, the nominee of the Party for Socialism and Liberation, PETA Lindsey. She's only 28 years old. She's running for president. Constitution says you got to be 35 to take office. We'll talk about it with PETA Lindsey. All this today, but first the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. You may reach us via email at inkstershow@wrkf.org or by phone locally, 297-5633, away from Baton Rouge, 877-217-5757. 7 days to go before the election for President of the United States as Hurricane Sandy slams the eastern seaboard. We'll see what happens a week from today as President Obama and Mitt Romney strive to be the President of the United States for the next 4 years. With us to talk about it, veteran state senator, former state senator, Tony Garisco, a Democrat, and Roger Villery, the chairman of the Louisiana Republican Party. Roger joining us by telephone from his office in Metairie. Good morning to you, Roger.
Good morning.
Well, Roger, let's start with Louisiana first. 16 years have passed since a Democrat won in Louisiana. His name was Bill Clinton, 1996. Yep. He won by a resounding margin that year over Bob Dole, about over 200,000 votes. What's happened since then? Why has our state veered so much to the red side of the political spectrum?
Well, I think the people in Louisiana had looked at the way Clinton governed, and they looked at the way the Democratic Party has been moving, and they decided that they really are more conservative in their values, and it really has been voting for most major offices for Republicans.
Well, the numbers from the Gallup organization, which, by the way, is consistently showing Mitt Romney with a sizable lead in this race. When I say sizable, 5 points, which is beyond the margin of error, the biggest gap in any poll. Their numbers show that 61% of Americans between 18 and 29 support the president. Only 48% of the people between 30 and 49 support the president. It goes down to 46 for those between 50 and 64 years of age. And those over 65, 41%. Now, those numbers obviously show an age differential in support for President Obama, but it also may show that at some point this may circle back around and the Democratic Party may end up being more palatable to people who get older, who are now between 18 and 29.
Well, what I think, though, you have to look at the current election, you know, you can look at the big picture. You can look at the current and with the current numbers and the way the demographics are. I think at this current election, in Louisiana would be solidly in the Republican favor
for Governor Mitt Romney. Now, Tony Garisco, you have served our state with distinction. 1988 was the last time you were in office. That's 25 years ago. He was unseated in the fall of 87 by one Mike Foster as a state senator. But in your time, let's go back, for example, 1972, Tony. That was McGovern versus Nixon, the late, great George McGovern, who died last week, Richard Nixon, who died in 1994. Who did you support in that election?
I voted for Democrat. I voted for Democrat every time for president, but I don't follow every Democratic position. I try to look at it all, but I'm certainly a Democrat, so that would fall on that. But I'm not an ideologue. Riding what you just said, in 1976 when I first took office, the Democratic Party was certainly so much in control that I remember the day when the first Republican got sworn into the Senate, and he said, "Well, I'm ahead of the minority." And now the Republicans do, in fact, control both houses of the both chambers of the legislature. But at that time, it was all Democrat.
So when you arrived in 1976 at the state capitol, the 39 senators were all Democrats.
That's accurate.
And who was the first Republican?
He's from Metairie.
That was Ken Hollis.
The late Ken Hollis.
In fact, me and Ken Hollis, we were the only two people in 1987. Edwin Edwards had a $1 billion tax proposal, and I was the only person, only Democrat, and Ken was, of course, a Republican. We were the only ones that voted against every one of the bills that created the $1 billion. It didn't help me in the election, but I voted against all the taxes.
Tony always was a maverick. But Mitt Romney, Roger, I think you would acknowledge he's not the first choice of many Republicans in this state, but nonetheless, he's preferable to Republicans over a Democratic president. But what about Governor Romney will stir the masses if he is elected president?
Well, I think that Governor Romney has shown his leadership abilities. He showed that when he was the governor of Massachusetts. He showed it in his business, and he showed it when he led the Olympics. So I think when you look at his record, and, you know, he was very solid and successful throughout his career and really whatever he got involved in.
But he's only been in politics as an elected official for 4 years.
Yes.
He has a record in that regard somewhat similar to that of a president named Jimmy Carter. I don't think he would like that comparison.
Well, you only can compare what you have to compare, and he was elected for 4 years, and he served, and he did a good job. And he worked with a legislature that was majority Democrat, and he worked across the aisle, which is something our current president said he would try and do and hadn't really reached out across the aisle at all.
Well, doesn't that go both ways, though? From day one, he had opposition from people like Senator McConnell.
Well, it's up to the president to reach out to them and try and work with them. I don't think you can have anyone just agree with everything you want to do. You have to sit down. You have to reach out to them and try and work with them. I think when you don't reach out and develop coalitions, you know, that becomes very hard. But Senator McConnell has been there a long time. He's worked with a lot of Republicans and Democrats, independents, so he can work across the aisle. He is not an ideologue. Senator McConnell is someone that knows how to work with people. He's not someone that is so entrenched in his ideology that he wouldn't work with him. I don't think the president reached out to him the way you need to.
Well, it was right when President Obama was elected that Senator McConnell said the ultimate goal of the opposition party was to defeat the president, make sure he was a first-termer.
That is the ultimate goal of every party, is to win for their party. But before that goal is to help the country. So you would not try and defeat someone in what they want to do if it would hurt the country. And the president could have reached out to him, and he did not.
But if, let's say, Governor Romney wins, and on the day he's elected or the day after, Senator Landrieu says, our ultimate goal is to defeat Mitt Romney and make sure he only serves one term, how would you react?
Well, I think that's, you know, what people say that, but it's up to Governor Romney to reach out to Senator Landrieu and work with her in every way he can to make sure he helps with you can't, when you're president, your job can't be to worry about winning re-election. It has to worry about being working to the benefit of your country. And I don't believe Obama did that at all. So I don't believe he reached out to the individuals in the opposition party.
Well, Tony, it appears the president missed an opportunity in the first debate. He was ahead in the polls. Many were basically conceding the election to him. In fact, a lot of money that has been invested in the Romney campaign would probably have not been there had not the president blown it in debate number one. What the heck happened in Danville, Kentucky, the home of Senator McConnell?
I don't know. I think I wasn't pleased with his performance. I didn't know he was over there playing basketball and going to look at the Boulder Dam, and it was sort of like the movie Rocky with Apollo Creed. Apollo's not worried about Rocky, and Rocky's in the meat locker beating on the beef and saying, "Hey, man, you better watch this guy." And Obama did blow it, and he came back pretty good in the second and third round, but I think Romney made his points. He gained some momentum. I think now most of it's flattened on both sides, but I think there's a certain degree of smugness and arrogance on Obama's part by doing what he did.
I'm sure Governor Romney would probably like being called Rocky Romney.
I had to think of that analogy.
That was quite an analogy, yeah.
Well, here is Senator McConnell of Kentucky commenting after President Obama was elected 4 years ago on the strategy that the GOP would have.
Our top political priority over the next 2 years should be to deny President Obama a second term.
All right. That's fairly plain and simple. 297-5633 is your number. Andy on Goodwood. Andy, you're on with Tony Garisco and Roger Villery. Hi, Andy.
Good morning, Jim. I just had a comment. Tony said a minute ago that President Obama did not reach out. I disagree with that. I mean, I am for Romney Care, having struggled with getting health insurance because of pre-existing conditions for 20 years. I took the side that, you know, the insurance company and the insurance industry should act right. If the government was forced to make them act right, well, then that was fine. It went so far, President Obama submitted a health care bill that the Republicans in the past were for and the Democrats were against. And now you're saying that he didn't reach out. And I think that people are smart enough to realize that you guys are just, as President Obama said on Rolling Stone magazine, y'all just full of shit.
Whoop. That we could have done without that, Andy on Goodwood. Now, Roger, what about, I think he was referring to you. He credited your statement to Tony.
Tony, but I think he was talking about me. Well, you know, I don't believe that the health care bill, which some people call Obamacare and that now they're trying to call Romney Care, I don't believe that bill is in the benefit of the long-term health of our country. I believe that the way the bill was written and the way they want to force Americans to buy a product, I don't believe the federal government has that and the ability to do that. I don't believe. I know the Supreme Court ruled it, so the Supreme Court says they have the right to do that because it's a tax. Well, when they passed it, they swore it wasn't a tax, and I guess if you call it a tax, you can do anything. But in that vein, I wish they'd have them sell flowers. You know, we could that'd be fun. That we could everybody had to buy flowers there.
Well,
all us florists would enjoy that. But to say you have to buy health care, and then the terms they make and people accept it under, and the doctors and the way they forcing it down people, I think you might on paper have great health care opportunities, but in reality, in the health care that you're going to have, it's not going to be there for people. The doctors I talked to, and I was on the board at East Jefferson Hospital for a long time, the doctors said that, you know, it's not workable the way they want them to reimburse it and pay for it, that most doctors I know are, you know, are encouraging their family and friends not to get involved in the medical profession. A lot of doctors telling me they're going to retire. So you're going to have better insurance, but you're going to have worse health care. So what have we gained by doing that?
Shouldn't doctors want to get into their field for reasons other than financial?
Well, I think that financially, they're in business to make money too. It's not to make obscene profits, but they have to make a living, and they go to school for a long period of time. And if there's other fields that they can go into and make a better living, you know, they want to make a reasonable living like everyone else.
All right, 297-5633 is your number. Republican Chairman Roger Villery in Metairie and Tony Garisco in our studio at WRKF. Back after this moment. a pause on the station. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Roger Villery, chairman of the Louisiana Republican Party, and Tony Garisco, Democrat, who says he's voted for Democrats since he was eligible to vote. So that means he probably voted for...
Started with John Kennedy.
Kennedy, Johnson, Humphrey, McGovern,
yeah, and all of them
Carter,
so great. Like Dukakis, I probably could have
Mondale,
done better.
Mondale, Dukakis, Clinton, Gore, Kerry, and Obama. 297-5633 is your number. Chuck in Lafayette, please be brief. Chuck, you're on with Roger and Tony. Hi, Chuck.
Hi. I just wanted to comment. Healthcare is an important topic, emergency services and all those things. We have a lot of research data, and it just really bothers me when I hear informed people start throwing out anecdotal evidence as though it's hard fact. For example, the speaker said, most of the doctors I know are against this. Well, I don't know. I think there's plenty of good research where we can get the opinions of doctors and do it in a formal, standardized way without throwing out evidence that may or may not be flawed. So.
Roger. Thank you, Chuck.
I can only go with the doctors I know. And obviously, having served on a board at a hospital and having been involved in health care through that, you know, I do know a lot of doctors, and that's what they tell me. I'm not making a statement that I took a poll. This is not a formal poll. I didn't say that everyone. I prefaced it with the ones I know, it's something that they're very concerned about, as would anyone. And you know, doctors aren't in it for the money. If they were in it for the money, most of them would do other things. But Jim, even yourself, if the government came in and told you you had to take a 33% cut in pay to do the same job you're doing, you'd have to really look at it and say, you know, am I going to work and be on this radio show for 33% less? And that's what they're telling the doctors. Your reimbursement's going to cut 33%. A lot of them saying, it's not acceptable.
I think I could handle 33%. I don't know about 35, but I could take 33. Tony?
I'd like to speak a little bit to the health thing, the issue. Yeah. One is I do remember back in the 60s when Johnson was president that Medicare was introduced and was put into effect. And I remember the same arguments. Doctors weren't going to get in the program, and they were against it and so forth. And they were until they started getting their checks. Before I got on the show this morning, I started thinking, this is anecdotal, but it's important to me. Where in my life would someone who would need medical care under the Affordable Care Act or the Obamacare business be affected? And I found three places real quick. I have a nephew who has type 1 diabetes. He was 15 years old when he got it. Last week, I have another nephew that's in Kentucky that got diagnosed with Crohn's disease, which is uncurable at this time. I have a friend who I begged him not to get into Medicare Advantage, and this is what's happened. He hates Medicare Advantage, want to get off and back on Medicare, and these other two people, they're going to be covered.
All right. Philip in Ponchatoula. Hi, Philip. You're on the air. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Romney has made the statement that he believes the states are better able to handle a program like Medicaid. And in the state of Louisiana, we can see what a Tea Party governor has done with the problem of Medicaid, which is simply to make wholesale cuts in it.
Roger, is that an accurate assessment from Philip and Ponchatoula?
The states are in charge of running Medicaid because that's part of their responsibility. So you have government oversight on it, and I think that each state has to make its own decisions, and I think that's the right thing. I think in the United States, the states have certain rights in running Medicaid and running the Medicaid program as the government sees fit is the right way to do it. And I think we have to look at what the state can afford to do and what responsibilities individuals have and they can afford to do.
Well, the governor has gone a step farther. He wants to reject any Medicaid money that is involved in Obamacare. Is that a good move?
I think that that's a decision the governor looked at with his advisors and looked at the amount of money coming in and where the expenses are. Not. I think that was a decision on his part that he felt was a decision he had to make for the betterment of Louisiana.
297-5633. You may also reach us online, Inkster Show at WRKF.org. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Hi, Phil. You're on with Tony Garisco and Roger Villery.
Good morning, gentlemen. I think I have a great bumper sticker coming up for the session for the new year. Would be for Congress, do your job. The Republican House voted 33 times to do against Obamacare. There were 170-something votes of cloture in the Senate to obstruct any bills that were going through it. And before they went out of session, they voted against the President's Jobs Act. And another one that was for the benefit of veterans. Mr. Villery, would you consider that doing your job?
Well, I think the Congress has to look at each individual bill, and you have to see what's detailed in the bill. So I think that they're going to vote what they think is the right thing in a particular bill. I would have to look at the individual bill and see what bill we're talking about. In the big picture, I think the Congress Congress voted to have a budget. Our president hadn't had a budget in, I guess it's going on 50 months now. I mean, we haven't put that together. There's a lot of things Congress needs to do. They need to get on the same page with the Senate and with the president. But when they pass a budget and they don't even discuss it in the Senate, they don't even bring it up for a vote, and the president doesn't try and work with Congress to get any type of budget passed.
Well,
all we are is going in debt where it's at over $1 trillion a year. Every year we're adding to our debt. We're at over $16 trillion now.
All right. Well, the point made in David Brooks' column today, which, by the way, ends with a tacit endorsement for Mitt Romney as the next president. He says that this president, Barack Obama, has offered $2.50 of spending cuts for every $1 in tax increases. Tony, do you think that's a palatable approach with the kind of debt and deficit that Roger just mentioned?
No, I'm not sure it is. I'm not sure it is. I don't know enough about those numbers to make a really intelligent answer to that, but I don't know.
All right. Ann on Blue Bonnet. Ann, good morning. You're on with Roger and Tony. Hi, Ann.
Yes, good morning. I agree with the prior caller that it's time for the Republicans in Congress to do their jobs. We had Bush in for 8 years, and there was never a health care plan. Nothing even got started. Nothing was done. Healthcare costs spiraled out of control. I think Obamacare is a good start. If they don't like parts of it, they need to work with it and tweak it. If they think it just increases your insurance coverage but not bring down healthcare costs, then that's a step forward. At least it covers insurance costs for people who otherwise could not get care and that were left out in Bush years.
All right. Now, the President, George Bush, did expand prescription drug coverage for seniors, and that, of course, has a cost of billions of dollars. That's another reason why the country is facing the kind of deficit and debt it is. Roger, was that a good move by President Bush?
You know, that was a decision on President Bush to increase that, but you have to, he should have cut expenses to pay for it. They didn't do that. The Democrats promised to work with him to cut expenses, and they never did. That's the problem with agreeing to 2-to-1 or 3-to-1 or 10-to-1. Every president back from Reagan said, well, you know, we will work with you. Let's cut and we'll raise some small taxes, and then we'll cut. Well, they never get around to cutting anything. We just keep spending more and more and more. The reason we're going so far in debt is that the United States government keeps increasing their spending, no matter how much revenue.
All right. A question from one of our listeners about the Senate race in 2 years. Mary Landrieu will be up for re-election. It appears she is likely to seek a fourth term. Roger, will this be item number one on your agenda after November 6th, trying to defeat Senator Landrieu?
Well, item number one on my agenda today is to elect a new president. So I'll tell you, we're 100% focused on the election coming up, and we have not focused on the upcoming elections. That being said, as chairman of the Republican Party, my job is to try and elect Republicans. So after this election, we'll look at the next round of elections, and I can assure you that number one on our agenda will be to elect Republicans to every office, including the Senate. So,
all right. Now, Tony Garisco, you served in the legislature with Senator Landrieu when she moved right from her sorority house at LSU to the Louisiana House in 1979.
Yeah, I did. She was in the House.
What's your impression?
And her sister, who's now a judge, was one of my aides. I think Mary's going to have a somewhat of a difficult race in 2 years.
And every race she has is difficult.
It's always been tough for her, and she's I think she's formidable herself, though. And I guess we'd be looking at possibly if Governor Romney becomes President Romney, I don't think it's out of our thoughts that the present governor may be interested in something. Maybe ambassador
all right,
to India.
Well,
I don't know.
I don't think he would take that job. But Roger Villery, independent of ambassador to India, is there a job in the Romney cabinet if Willard Mitt Romney takes the oath on January 20th as the 45th American president? Will Bobby Jindal be going with him to Washington?
Bobby tells me he's staying right here in Louisiana, that there's a lot of work to do in Louisiana. He wants to be governor, and he wants to work in our state and be here. And he said he's going to be in Louisiana. He has the job he wants.
But for a man who loves Louisiana, born here, raised here, the reason he's here is that his mom got a job at LSU in 1971. He sure spends a lot of time out of state, Roger.
Well, he gets a lot of requests. He gets requests from help because people feel highly of him and they like his leadership. And I can tell you he gets 10 times the requests that he does. I get calls every single day from people wanting him to travel all over the country to help them out. And the governor is selective about where he goes. But he's showing leadership, and he's bringing new business into Louisiana. He is out meeting people. He is out meeting business people. He is out meeting elected officials. And he is helping bring new industry and business to Louisiana. He is always working on Louisiana's benefit.
Tony?
Well, I don't think he's working on Louisiana's benefit. He's trying to get people elected to office in other places in the country and also the president. And I think that he should, Jimmy Davis was out of the state in Hollywood at one time. Governor Jindal now has been out of the state longer than Jimmy Davis was when he was making movies in Hollywood. And I think that Jindal should pay a daily rate for every day he's out campaigning for other people back into the Treasury for the salary he's taken.
What about the state troopers?
Troopers also, but nobody mentioned about his salary. He's getting paid. He's on our clock when he's working somewhere else, and that's wrong.
But Bill Clinton ran for president when he was governor of Arkansas. Ronald Reagan ran for president when he was governor of California. Jerry Brown did the same thing. I suspect this has been done by other governors as far as having the taxpayers foot the bill for their future political endeavors.
Well, that's been tolerated because the person has been running for the office of president itself. This guy's not running for anything but running all around, talking fast, scolding and lecturing people. You know, that's
doesn't
all he
sound
can.
Like you like him too much.
Well, I have a lineage to him. Mike Foster defeated me, and then Mike Foster found Bobby Jindal. And I never criticized Mike Foster for anything he ever did, except he found Bobby Jindal. That's the only thing I can say.
Well, Roger,
and I'm ashamed that I'm a part of that lineage.
Roger, I suspect you would say that's one of Foster's best moves, was finding Bobby Jindal.
Well, I think Governor Foster is proud that he first tapped Bobby Jindal to be part of his administration. And obviously, his leadership quality showed through early, and he went on to become a congressman and now governor. So, you know, I think it speaks for itself.
Dan downtown. Dan, you're on the air with Roger and Tony. Hi, Dan.
Hi. Yeah, Mr. Villery, you expressed concern for doctors' income under Obamacare. Are you at all concerned that because Jindal refuses to reinstate the Stelly plan and is closing hospitals, there won't be training facilities for future doctors?
Well, I tell you, the Stelly plan, I don't believe was a good plan. I believe it was anti-Louisiana. I believe it hurt Louisiana with growth and business, and I don't believe that was the right thing to do. So I think we're one of the few states to try and run our own hospital system. I think putting up hospitals in a private enterprise is the right way to do it. I think it should have been done over a period of time. And not maybe in an emergency situation like we have now, because we're losing so much income. But sometime a crisis comes up, and you just have to make the tough decisions, and that's what the governor has made, hard decisions that he needs to move the state forward. So, but I don't believe the Stelly plan was the right plan for Louisiana.
By the way, tomorrow on the show we'll have Jason DeQueer, who's a high-ranking attorney in the Department of Revenue, and he and the Secretary Tim Barfield are working on a tax reform plan, and we'll talk with Jason about what's going on as far as another bid for tax reform, this time from Governor Jindal. Now, Roger, you were a Republican before Republicans became the majority party in Louisiana. And when I say majority, in numbers, Republicans are by far the minority party in the state, but
in registered numbers,
in
right,
registered numbers,
minority,
yeah,
right.
By a decided amount. But when it comes to statewide elections, the Republicans have gained control of Louisiana. When did you become a Republican?
1972.
Were you a Democrat before?
I was. I registered when I first registered to vote.
And what prompted you to become a member of the GOP?
Well, I argued with my mom from day one. I wanted to register as Republican. She told me I was going to disenfranchise myself if I did, because I lived in Jefferson Parish at the time, and every major office was held by Democrats. And she said that it's over. You won't be able to vote. And so her and I argued about it, and so I just went and registered a couple years later, I just went and switched because I didn't really believe in the Democrat philosophy.
And Tony, you say you voted for every Democrat for president since 1960. Is that why you're wearing blue today?
No, that's not why I'm wearing blue. It's not symbolic. But yeah, I started off as a Democrat because a party ID usually is what your parents have and I'm a Democrat, and I was in the Constitutional Convention and further formulated my ideas, and they're more on the liberal side, especially in the social area. So I'll always be a Democrat, and I'll never change.
Well, thank you, Roger Villery. Thank you, Tony Garisco. And please, everybody, vote a week from today. Thank you. And we'll be back after this brief timeout with Peta Lindsey. She is the nominee for president for the Party of Socialism and Liberation. This is Jim Engster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Kevin Gallagher is producing, and in studio is Peta Lindsey. She is the nominee for president for the Party of Socialism and Liberation, and Peta is an impressive young person, graduate of Howard University, and she is only 28 years old. Now, the Constitution says, the U.S. Constitution says you have to be 35 to take office as president. So why are you running when you can't take office for another 7 years?
Okay, well, that's a question that has many parts, and I just want to start off by saying thank you so much for having me on. It's great to be able to talk to you this morning. So let's talk about the issue of constitutional eligibility. You know, there was a point in the history of this country when I wouldn't have been eligible because I'm black, or I wouldn't have been eligible because I'm a woman. And the only reason that that changed is because those people from those communities refused to accept the marginalization under the law and refused to accept their status as second-class citizens. And, you know, I think this is a very important time in our country for young people. If you look at the crises that are facing our country right now, I think that inarguably unemployment is one of the biggest crises facing our country right now. You know, we have millions of people out of work, millions of people who are struggling. And, you know, youth unemployment is disproportionately high. Youth unemployment is actually the highest it's been since the government began recording those statistics. I think another huge problem facing us right now is skyrocketing tuitions and massive student loan debt. You know, school is becoming more and more out of reach for working class students. And if you want to go, you know, you have to take out these exorbitant loans. We have like $1 trillion of aggregate student loan debt in the country right now. And I come from California where, you know, the college tuitions have gone up 316% in just the last 10 years. So every single new graduating class has higher student loan debt than the last. And I think this is becoming a real crisis, especially when paired with the lack of jobs. One more issue is the war.
Well, wait a minute. You're not going to be able to go off on a tangent and give a speech when I ask you a question about why you're running at 28 when you have to be 35. And you start announcing every plank in your platform. We'll get to that, PETA.
Well, one more issue is the war.
Would you run for an office that you're ineligible for?
Again, the average age of a congressman who declares war is 60. The average age of a soldier fighting in Afghanistan is 19. So they're more than three times as old as the people who actually have to go fight those wars. So what I'm saying is that given the young people are disproportionately affected by these crises, why is it acceptable to exclude us from the political process? Why is it acceptable then to disenfranchise us in this way and keep us from affecting those policies? So for us, you know, primarily we're running because we don't believe that change comes from the politicians. We believe that change comes from the movement of the people. If you look at everything that oppressed people have won in this country, from civil rights to women's rights to labor rights, it's been, you know, thousands of people, millions of people who organized and fought for those rights. And traditionally, it's always been young people at the leadership of those movements.
You're on the ballot in how many states?
We're using the election to build that movement.
You're on the ballot in how many states?
13 states.
13 states, mm-hmm. including Louisiana. Now, what is it about the nominees from the two major parties that you find unsatisfying?
Well, I think that the elections right now as they stand are a sham. It's a rigged game that's rigged against working people. The two major candidates are spending something like $2.5 billion campaigning. And while they're both rich individually, you don't get that kind of money without the support of the biggest banks and corporations. And if you look at who donates, it's often the same banks and corporations donating on both sides. So that regardless of who wins, whether it's the Democrats or Republicans who win, it's the banks who win, it's the corporations who win, and it's the people who lose. So like I said, we believe real change comes from the people, not the politicians. So we're using this election as a platform to build the movement.
Okay, 297-5633 is your number. PETA Lindsay, the guest, nominee for the Party of Socialism and Liberation, and she will be on the ballot a week from today in Louisiana as a candidate for President of the United States. Graduate of Howard University, born in 1984, the year that Ronald Reagan carried 49 states against Walter Mondale. When did you have your political evolution? You grew up in Philadelphia. Was there some catalyst to the positions that you're now enunciating?
Well, you know, I started organizing when I was in middle school. You know, I started organizing as a very young person. We were fighting for more money for Philadelphia public schools. You know, we had realized that the surrounding school districts got about $2,000 more per student. And our school district, which was majority black and a great deal low income, received, you know, inadequate funding for our schools. So we were organizing and fighting for that. We organized a walkout of 2,000 students that met in downtown Philadelphia. And, you know, at one point, we took a number of buses up to the state capitol to talk to our elected officials, to talk to them about why there wasn't enough money mm-hmm. for our schools. And one of the elected officials, one of the state legislators came out and told us that, of course, our schools didn't receive as much funding because our parents didn't pay as much in property taxes, which is kind of shocking, you know, to tell a room full of kids that because they were born poor, because they were born to parents who couldn't afford better housing, that we deserved a less quality education as well. I mean, there's nothing equal about that. There's no equality there. So for me, it was like understanding that not only does this massive inequality exist, but often our elected officials embrace that inequality and they perpetuate it. You know, his kids didn't go to Philadelphia public schools. He didn't care about our education. And so that was how I kind of entered the struggle and how I kind of came to recognize that, you know, this inequality, it exists. Our elected officials aren't doing anything about it. And it's up to the people to fight it themselves.
And sounds like you're saying hypocrisy, too.
I mean, yeah, well, they talk about, you know, this great country of opportunity and all that, but it's working class kids who have to fight for educational opportunity. You know, if you're born to richer parents, you're guaranteed those opportunities, you know. And yeah, it's a big problem.
What do you think of the president?
You know, I think that the situation for working people in the U.S. has declined greatly in the last 4 years, but it's because of the system. It's because of the system of inequality, the system of capitalism, more so than any individual politician. You know, a lot of people put their hope in Obama and really, you know, hoped for great progressive change and all that. And I think, you know, they're learning that it's not going to come from the top. It's got to come from the bottom. You know, there was an interesting New York Times article a couple weeks ago that compared progressive legislation passed under Nixon and progressive legislation passed under Obama. And there was actually more progressive legislation passed under Nixon. And Nixon was awful. You know, like, he was racist, sexist, like anti-human. It's not because Nixon liked the people better, but it's because it was like 1968. It was 1972. There was this mass movement demanding those things. And that movement is what won concessions. You know, so that's why we're saying it's really the most important thing is to get out there and organize to build the movement.
What about Governor Romney? What's your take on him?
Okay, come on. I think that I couldn't imagine, you know, a more out of touch, a more privileged person, you know, being in office. You know, yeah, that whole the comment about the 47%, his whole discussion about the 47% who think they're entitled to things. You know, we believe that the working people of this country created the wealth of this country. You know, this an enormously wealthy country that was created by our work. And yes, we are absolutely entitled to the things we need to survive. That wealth that we created should be used to fund the things that we need. You know, so we certainly don't need politicians like Romney who show such obvious disdain for working people. But I'm saying, you know, what we believe is that the answer is outside of the two-party system, that the answer doesn't lie in the politicians, it lies in the people.
Well, there are some who say that you may peel votes off President Obama more so than Governor Romney. Does that trouble you at all, Peter?
Well, you know, Eugene Debs, who was a socialist, ran for president in the 1920s and got a million votes from prison before Facebook. Debs said, I'd rather vote for what I want and not get it than vote for what I don't want and get it. And I think that that's what we're telling people. You know, we've got a 10-point program. If you're more interested in finding out what we're about, you can go to votepsl.org. But we're talking about creating jobs. We're talking about free healthcare. Affordable housing, free education, all the things that working people need. And we're saying if you believe in those things, if you want those things too, and you vote for us. Vote for those things that you actually want, you know, instead of voting for things that you don't want.
The Party for Socialism and Liberation is the party that our guest, Peter Lindsay, is the nominee of, and she is running for president of the United States. It's a Marxist-Leninist organization. Is that fair to say? Now, there are those who say, and they said it on this show, people call in. Some guests have said the president's a socialist. You're smiling. What do you think?
I think that's absolutely untrue. You know, a lot of people say that. You know, but name one socialist thing that he's done. You know, the president presided over the largest transfer of public wealth into private hands in our nation's history. He gave $700 billion of our money, of taxpayer money, to the banks, to the private banks overnight. That's the exact opposite of what a socialist would do. That's the exact opposite of what we're talking about.
Now, your running mate is?
Jody Osorio.
And tell us about...
Oh, he's great. He's an activist and organizer from New York City. He was born in Colombia and grew up undocumented. You know, he knows about the struggle of undocumented people in this country, you know, about the massive denial of rights and, you know, and the difficulties and the hardship of being a young immigrant in the United States. And so... he's been a fantastic leader in the immigrant rights movement and the movement against racist police brutality and the movement against the racist stop and frisk policies in New York. And he's, like I said, great organizer, great also young man.
Peter Lindsay is the candidate for the Party for Socialism and Liberation for president. She's on the ballot in Louisiana. Lloyd in Gonzales asks about the two candidates, Romney and Obama. He says, has either one ever had a blue-collar job?
That's a good question.
And I can't think of one. So they never worked with their hands.
You know, I saw something interesting about, if I may, I saw something interesting about Romney's money, the taxes that he filed last year. You know, he made $15 million last year, according to him, and $6 million of it was off of interest. Like, so that's money that he made off of already having money in the bank.
Well, he's a rich guy, and to his credit, he was born rich, but he got richer. Isn't that what this country is all about?
But it's funny because he says, like, they earned it. They earned this wealth. But $6 million off of interest means that if he had never gotten out of bed for the entirety of last year, he would have made $6 million. You know, he would have made $34,000 every day for each day that he didn't get out of bed.
Well, that's how wealth is accumulated. But he also, a remark that I'm surprised the president has not used against Governor Romney. Romney, when he was running in the primary, says, hey, I'm unemployed too.
Oh, gosh.
His kind of unemployment's a bit different than the unemployment that you've seen across this great land of ours, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's so disingenuous.
297-5633. Brian in Prairieville. Brian, you're on with Peter Lindsay, candidate for president of the United States of America.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. You know, hooray for Romney. He's rich, and his family happened to work hard and achieve success in life. And it seems like people want to punish everybody that's rich now. I'm not rich, but I would really love to be successful like that someday. But the real reason for my call is that your guest there mentioned free health care. I work in health care. There's nothing that can ever be free in health care. And in America, how it's pretty much worked to this point is that if you had a job, you got benefits, and your employer paid some of your health care, and you paid a portion of that, too, by getting a reduced wage. And now with the Obama care coming out, I mean, just in Louisiana, 47% of the people are going to be on Medicaid.
All right.
I mean, we're not saying that healthcare wouldn't have costs associated with it, but we're saying, like, who would pay those costs? You know, this is an extraordinarily, like I mentioned, this is an extraordinarily rich country. We have money. It's just, where is that money going? That money is not going to provide healthcare for everyone. You know, that money is going to things like war. It's going to things like bailouts for the banks. We're saying that we need a bailout for the people. I mean, every single person in this country is going to get sick. It's part of the human condition. We're all going to need to see a doctor. Why is it that a handful of people should profit off of our misery? You know, there are a lot of countries that do provide free healthcare, and they're countries that are much poorer than the United States, but they still manage to do it because they prioritize the health of their people, unlike the U.S.
Well, there was a story today, in fact, I think it's in the Baton Rouge Advocate as well, about the way wealth is confiscated, if you will, through taxes in other parts of the world. In France, if you earn over $1.3 million, 75% is the top tax rate. In the U.K., if you earn over $240,000, it's 50%. Would you like to see something like that in the United States?
I mean, I think that we could definitely, raise taxes on the rich. But for us, it's about rearranging production, you know, making production about people instead of profit. And there are other sources for income. I mean, the war in Afghanistan costs almost $400 million a day, $400 million every day. You know, real Pentagon spending something like $1 trillion. We have an army that's like 26 times the size of the next largest military. I mean, we could definitely find money there if we need money to fund these things that people need.
All right, 297-5633 is your number. A listener says President Obama worked at a Baskin-Robbins, and that is a blue-collar job. Don't think he had to flex those muscles too much at Baskin-Robbins, but that's a noble position, and we commend the president for having worked there. And I had not heard that. Have you? Had you? No?
Okay. Oh, me neither.
All right. I'm looking through some emails now, and... you may reach us at inkstershow@wrkf.org. And some folks are saying that you're quite a lively guest.
Sorry about
sure
that.
I'm sure you've been told that before. I don't know what you take, but I'd like to get some of that energy.
The young thing, you know, it's like I say, the young people have traditionally been the leaders of the movement. We have energy and we don't have a lot to lose, especially right now.
Well, what's the first thing you would do on January 20th, 2013, if you take the oath of office as the 45th American president?
Sure. Our number one priority is to make a job a constitutional right. You know, we've got so many people out there who are unemployed, who are underemployed, who need jobs with dignity and jobs that pay a living wage. We would definitely make getting people jobs and getting people back to work a priority. Like I said, number two, we want to immediately cancel all student loan debt. We want to bail out the students instead of bailing out the banks. We would put an immediate moratorium on foreclosures and evictions. We would say, if you're in a house, that is your house. You do not have to pay these banks that extended these fraudulent loans that have these fraudulent practices that tanked our economy.
When Shirley Chisholm ran for president 40 years ago, she was asked a question about which caused her to have more discrimination, being a woman or being an African-American. What would be your answer to that question?
Oh, it's a double whammy. You know, you never know. You never know when somebody's talking to you what they're what they're mad about or what the issue is. And, you know, I take great, you know, I'm very proud to be following the footsteps of Shirley Chisholm. You know, her name has come up a lot in the campaign, and it's extremely heartening for me to think that I could be in that category, you know. Like I said, all of the progress that we've made, all the progress that African Americans have made, that women have made, it's been as a result of the struggle of refusing to accept our marginalization and fighting to get in there.
So who were your political role models?
I think Shirley Chisholm is a great one. And for me, it's like, you know, I look at the civil rights movement a lot, and the way that we're taught history in this country, it's like the history of great men. They say, like, one great man came along and made everything, you know, and February, they always say it was Martin Luther King gave us civil rights. But the reality is, you know, there were thousands of people organizing. For me, it's about finding out the stories of all of those people who did actions, big or small, in their community that made this movement what mm-hmm. it was.
I can tell you're passionate about what you're doing. You're getting emotional.
Yeah. I mean, it means a lot to me. The history, there's a really proud legacy of struggle in this country, and people, you know, and it's a legacy that I'm glad to continue.
Well, where is the future of our country going? In your estimation,
you know, we're rapidly reaching a turning point when it comes to the environment, when it comes to the economy. You know, we've got to, if we do not organize, if we do not fight to get working people, to get people and the planet, you know, the people and the things that people need, like a healthy planet, as the priority, then we could be lost. You know, so I think that it's more crucial now than ever that people struggle.
Well, the state of the landscape today is that most candidates won't even say they're liberal. Much less say they're a socialist. So you're getting out there. I think you know it,
right? And you know, I think the tide is changing, because you know the Pew Center for Research did a study that came out last year that showed that 47% of young people and 55% of African Americans had a favorable view of the word socialism. You know, I think the conditions in this country are changing, and people are more open to looking at alternatives mm-hmm. to the system that we have right now.
A listener says, "Have you met Hugo Chavez?" The answer is yes.
Yes, yes.
I've seen the photos.
I attended a conference in Venezuela in 2004, and it was really amazing to see what the government could do once it had turned its resources to providing for the people. And I met Hugo Chavez at that conference, but we also, you know, we went up into the poorer neighborhoods where they had just built new clinics, where they were suddenly providing free health care to people who had never seen a doctor, you know, dental care to people who had never seen a dentist. And it was amazing that they were able to do so fast, you know, with the massive oil wealth in their country.
Well, thank you for coming by today, and I appreciate you slowing down and having a conversation, because you're very eloquent, and it's great to hear your points of view, PETA Lindsay. Good luck.
Thank
you
so much. I really enjoyed talking.
My pleasure. And we'll be back tomorrow. Please vote a week from today, and PETA will be on the ballot. In fact, she'll be right there between. No, she'll be before Obama and Romney, both of them. She'll be before them. But we'll talk more about the election tomorrow and much more. Until then, for Kevin, I'm Jim. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.